All right, let's start with this. What's your most random hidden talent?
My most random hidden talent? Damn, we're just getting right into this.
Yeah, put you on the spot.
I can burp the ABCs.
Can you?
Yeah. I'm not going to do it right now.
You don't have to do it.
I just had some liquid death. That was that's actually what I was thinking, and then I actually had to burp. But yeah, I can burp the ABCs.
We've been studying liquid death in our accounting class.
Yeah?
Very interesting. And I'm gonna.
What are they doing? Some special accounting?
It's more just about like their marketing and stuff. But yeah.
And that's an accounting class?
Yeah, man. It's all encompassing. This is MBA level stuff. Okay.
As long as their assets equals their liabilities plus shareholder equity, like I'm good.
Yeah. Right. Nice. Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Where were we? Where have we been?
Where have you been? I'll tell you where I've been after you tell me.
I was going to go to Beer City. Threw in the towel. I had just been traveling far too much because we had New York. Then I was back in Austin, then Michigan, hosting Jay DeVillier at my dad's, who went to Ed Sheeran, held hands. It was magical.
Really? Did he play perfect?
No, he didn't. It was weird. It was like a weird set list. I mean, I guess he came out with a new album that wasn't as popular as the last one.
Mm.
And I just didn't know like any of the songs.
You didn't know the songs?
No. But
– You didn't listen to him ahead of time, get ready for the
concert? We did a little bit, but we listened to the old stuff, right?
I got to ask, just because I'm curious, you know, what you wear to concerts is a big thing. Yeah. What do you wear when you go to Ed Sheeran with your bro? What do you wear?
I went with my little brother. I went with Jay and my mom. And we were in a box, so there's like other people in there. And they were like dressed to the nines, right? Like it was their night out. But – Jay actually had no clue.
He was dressed as a slut.
Jay coming in. All right. Michigan, he lost his luggage. So he was just wearing pickleball gear for like I think he was at my dad's house for like 5 days. So before the concert, we're like, wait, what are you going to wear? So we just start like raiding my brother's closets and just like having him try on stuff. He's got big legs. So he put on probably like 5 pairs of pants that were skin tight. And we were like, God. And finally, we found one pair that was like acceptable. So we put him in that, gave him a button down, even gave him some shoes. He ended up actually looking pretty legit. But okay. My brother and I were in like t-shirt, like flannel and like hats.
I think the internet wants to see some pictures of this Jay outfit.
I have a video because we get to the concert. It's kind of slow. You know, Ed Sheeran, it's very romantic. It's not the,
it's very romantic, yeah.
You go with your boys. But in the box, there was like a TV screen because like, you know, it's where it's Ford Field where the Lions play, right? So they play the football games, replays and stuff up there during football games. So this TV was on and UFC was on. And we were like.
Wait, during a concert, they just had a UFC fight? We're watching
UFC and Ed Sheeran.
All right, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So I go, all right, I think we should put a little action on this. So we bet, I don't know, maybe like $100 on this one fight, lost. And we're like, okay, now we gotta win big here. So we did a 3-leg parlay. We hit every one and won like $700.
Oh, damn.
And so we made the concert a lot better that way. It was actually pretty fun.
Wow. What a wild night with Jay DeVilliers and yeah. Ed Sheeran in Michigan.
All right. Well, what else happened with Jay? We played 50 games of pickleball. I played Jay in singles. How do you think I did?
Did he play like lefty?
I never played singles. He played – no, we played straight up.
See, I just don't think that he would take it seriously enough to like destroy you. I bet it was like 11-4, 11-5.
Okay. I had him game point 10-9.
No way.
Yes. In the middle of it's probably like
was
8,
he using
7
his like
something.
Vulcan children's paddle?
He was using whatever Vulcan he plays with, but in the middle he was like, "Oh shit, I might lose this." And every time we would play, like anytime like if I hit an Ernie on him or if I had like a good shot, he'd constantly through like the 5 days he was there, he'd be like, "God, this is gonna be on the podcast. This is gonna be on the podcast." Like he kept saying that. So it's probably like 8-9 or 8-7 or something like that. I'm up, and you see he's going, "Oh shit!" You can see him like doing the calculation. Is like, okay, I got to win this. So he goes, he switches paddles and he comes back out and he like turned it on for the last few points. And he ended up winning, I think, like 13-11.
Okay. All right. That's respectable.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's respectable.
Kind of feeling my singles game right now.
Yeah. You gonna make a comeback?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about it. I would like to play you in singles.
Pro singles hasn't developed much in the last couple of years. You can probably step right in.
Yeah. 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 I was playing my uncle does senior pro. I think he's like top 40 now. He's like working his way up. Was a really good tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been playing some singles with him. He's helping me with strategy, trying to figure it out.
It was all from that clinic over at the Ocean Reef Club.
Yeah, right. So Jay taught him how to play singles, and then he taught me, and then I almost beat Jay.
Oh no, I taught your uncle over there too.
Really?
I did a clinic. Did You've some clinics there? Over there. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was sweet.
Yep, that's where I basically like learned to play, not 3-0 pickleball. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else happened with Jay? Anything else interesting?
No, but I have a sick clip of me hitting an ATP on him. He defends it, but then I come and put it away and body bag him.
Oh, no way.
But I've been nice enough not to release it.
Oh, yet. No, release it. I just released a clip of me nasty Nelsoning someone today.
I know, which was unbelievable, by the way.
On the agenda. It's on the agenda. We'll circle back to that.
I want to understand, like, was that?
Yeah, that's going to be Thomas, it's going to be its own segment, okay? Yeah, okay. It's going to be its own segment.
So then I was back in Austin. I was supposed to go to Michigan for Beer City, but I was like, I've just been traveling so much. I got to throw in the towel. But,
yeah, that's how I feel too. I went to Denver, and then I was home for like 2 days, went to New York. I was in New York before that. Afterwards, I did like a photo shoot in Chicago, went over to Grand Rapids. I realized
for
that I
had Proxer?
Been, for Proxer, yeah. I realized that I had been in Austin, Denver, New York, Chicago, and Grand Rapids all in 5 days.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Wild.
So traveling a lot too. Also, we're just lazy. Don't do the podcast via Zoom, I guess.
Yeah, no.
Zoom podcasts just aren't as good.
No, they aren't. You're
especially not the.
You're playing
the
from behind if you do like a Zoom pod, unless you have like a really good setup.
That is a shot, direct shot at Nunnery and Stone.
A lot of people. No, well, I told them that. I was like, you guys need to get on like actual studio equipment, but you know,
is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, we have Jimmy and Tyler. Yeah. What is that? I don't know. You wrote this.
Yeah, recapping our live stream, which was interesting.
The live stream did not go the way that we had anticipated. No. I think that the content was good. The production left something to be desired. But overall, definitely a cool opportunity to be able to go there and talk through the picks and talk to some of the owners about what was going through their head and whatnot. Thank you, everybody, for roasting our production as well.
Yeah, plenty of that.
Yeah. But it was like, warranted. I mean, warranted.
For sure. But I think that was a W in my book, given the circumstances. So we want to do it again. We'll try and do it better this time. But, I guess we kind of recapped everything when we were in the pod or we were in the studio at Morning Brew of New York. But.
Yeah, I think we touched on that a lot. MLP stuff is old news.
Beaten to the ground.
Yeah. Everybody with a podcast, all 100 people who have podcasts now about pickleball, who are all ranked number 2 through 100, everybody's talked about it already.
Yeah, there was like 3 new podcasts announced last week, too.
Yeah, I saw that. Who was it?
There's one. Pickleball Effect is doing one.
Some other pro was
Sam Querrey.
Oh yeah, I saw that one. I saw that one yesterday.
I couldn't tell if they're actually going to do that or not.
It's hard to know when Sam Querrey is serious.
There was one other I saw, but I can't remember. But it's like, you know, every week there's a new pod.
Yeah, some other pro pickleball player.
Yeah.
That I don't.
Oh, NML.
Oh yeah, NML podcast.
NML,
there we go.
Did theirs?
Did they release one yet?
Yeah, I turned it on for a second, but didn't. Didn't actually get to listen to it, so yeah.
I heard that Timmy P roasted me on the last episode of It Feels Right.
Yeah, but I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
So I don't
know. You
haven't
watched it yet?
Mm-mm.
It's all right. Neither does anybody else, so that's good. I might actually, he was texting us about something that they talked about, which was like chunking theory or something.
Yeah. No, he said drafting you was the original sin.
Yeah. I mean, like, not super wrong. Drafting me in the first round. We'll say drafting me first round might have been the original sin.
Yeah.
But.
Or do you have like a chip on your shoulder for this upcoming MLP?
Well, yeah, I want to do better than last.
Okay. You should figure out how to get a chip on your shoulder, okay, as your brand manager, as your agent.
So what does Zane with a chip on his shoulder look like? What do you envision?
I don't know. Remember that match when you and DJ played Rafa and, I don't know, were you like screaming and chirping the whole time? I think that's just got to be you the entirety of the next event.
Okay. Well, I got my boy Joe Pulliam, who not a whole lot of people know, but he is this guy from Atlanta that is a savage and a phenomenal crap talker. So he will be there. He'll be getting riled up for the next MLP.
Yeah.
He's a Squeeze fan.
What was your...
Born and raised Squeeze fan.
Yeah. So who's on your team? Bright?
It's me, Anna, Deskier. Andre, and Rachel.
Yeah. What's Rachel's last name?
Rohrabacher.
Yeah. That was one of the surprises in the... late in the draft. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Deescu's, am I saying that right?
Just go for it.
His philosophical tweets.
I didn't know that Andre was such a deep, deep guy. No. Like, there's just a lot of things that are going on in this guy's head. I'm glad that he's finally getting it all out on social, on paper, on, you know, all the medias. Follow on Threads. He's on Threads. He's on X. He's on the Gram. He's on Facebook. He's probably on the tickety-tockety.
I've never actually met him. He's my new favorite player.
You've never met Andre?
No.
Legend.
Yeah.
So just read all those things in a Romanian accent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how they're how they're supposed to be read.
He had that one Instagram video of him explaining the story of the name of Pickleball, where he's just like looking at the camera. And I texted Nunnery. I was like, is he semi-joking or is he just that genuine? He was like, he's that genuine. It's like, okay. I love this guy. He's my new favorite.
He's a goat.
Yeah.
Twitter game is very, very strong from Andre. I wake up, I'm like, man, Andre usually tweets right around 7:30 a.m., which is perfect. I've been up for a couple hours waiting for that tweet to be inspired and motivated for the rest of the day.
Hopefully more of where that came from in the next MLPs.
100%. I hope he's saving some of this content for me for MLP time.
Yeah. All right. Beer City. General thoughts.
Wait, hold on.
Takeaways.
Hold on. We got to announce that we have a sponsor of the swear jar. Pro XR is matching all of our foul mouths.
Okay.
So it is from now on the Pro XR swear jar. And I made this thing a while ago. the stop Alzheimer's now. I spent a lot of time doing that.
It's not bad.
What's that?
It's not bad.
It's actually pretty good. Yeah, I'd say it's actually pretty good. Pro XR is going to be tougher. Pro XR is just like, I think I might just write Pro XR.
Yeah, but you're not going to get the colors right.
But actually, it is pretty cool. They are matching all of our swear words. So thank you. Thank you, Pro XR.
Thank you, Proxer.
For matching our cuss words.
Have they said anything about us calling it Proxer over and over again?
I don't know, but maybe they'll start watching now.
Yeah.
Now that they're...
Watch before?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I mean, I think that they knew what they were getting when they signed me. I hope that they knew what they were getting when they signed me. But I'm like the in-person version of Heyshay. I'm just a troll.
Yeah. Okay. Get that shot in. They sent me one of your paddles, so I'm going to be trying that out here soon.
I gave you one of my paddles on like three different episodes.
It was standard. You gave me a standard. I want the one you use.
You could have just asked. I know a guy.
Yeah. So Joe sent me one. Joe walked up to me at MLP and was like, I'll send you one right now. We did it on the phone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool. What a guy. Yeah,
got some hats too.
Nice. They're very liberal with giving out the hats, which is nice.
So I'm not special.
No.
Okay. I didn't think I was. Yeah.
Do you want a Chicago Slice hat?
I have like 11.
Okay, good. There was like a 10-day period.
Or no, I have one of those. I think it's a Squeeze. I have a ton of their stuff.
You got a bunch of Squeeze stuff?
Yeah.
I got to give away my Slice stuff. I was a free agent for like 10 days.
Yeah.
Between the Frisco and Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was repping the Slice a little bit.
And what, do you have the hats with you?
I have a Slice hat if you
what
want
What color?
Black.
Let me see that one. For my family Major League Pickleball, I was on the Slice. We came in second.
Oh, yeah?
But I have a white hat because of that.
All right. Hold on one sec.
This is good. This is good podcasting right here.
Never mind. I don't even have one. I thought I
did.
Oh,
you don't?
It was in my bag earlier today.
All right. What a letdown. You're wearing a Stack hat.
What a shame. I am. They gave this to me at MLP as well.
One of the new apparel brands.
I don't really know much about them, but it's a cool hat.
They sent me a bunch of stuff, too. Have to rock it.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about Beer City. Main takeaways. I think one of the things I thought was interesting was like Andrea was talking about how one of the primary goals of that tournament is to really take care of the players and give them the best experience possible. Do you feel like that was the case? Accommodations were strong and everything like that?
Yeah. So here's what I've been thinking about a little bit. Like, I think that Beer City, the reason why it's so loved by pros is they really do try to take care of us in all the little ways.
Yeah.
You know, something like hotel rooms and, you know, going out to dinners and with, you know, sponsors of the tournament or just fun people like this guy, George, who runs AHC Hospitality. Their main sponsor of the, or a large sponsor. I think they might be title sponsor of the Beer City Open. He gets us in, you know, there's an AC Marriott downtown, there's a JW Marriott downtown, and there's the Amway Grand Hotel, which is unbelievable, in downtown Grand Rapids. He hooks it all up for us and takes us out to dinner, player party, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really tailored to us, and there's lots of cool stuff. And
yeah.
I've been thinking more about it, and I think that the reason it's so loved is because you have a tournament director who's spending their entire year in the community trying to build up this one tournament. And so I was thinking.
Is this Andrea you're referring to?
Andrea and Paul Richards.
Paul,
so yeah. Andrea's in charge of the pro stuff. Paul Richards is, I think, the president of the Grand Rapids Pickleball Club.
Okay.
And also the tournament director for the Beer City Open for everything other than the pros.
Uh-huh. At that same venue. It's like Belknap or something like
Belknap
that?
Belknap Park, yeah.
Okay.
And the proceeds from the tournament have gone towards getting a center court at Belknap Park. They've gone towards evicting the bike polo people that used to take over a couple of like the back corner of Belknap Park.
Bike polo?
They used to play bike polo at Belknap Park.
Okay. What's bike polo?
I'd assume it's very similar to polo, but instead of horses, you have bikes.
Really?
Yeah.
You're no, like it's a croquet mallet and you're like hitting around a ball. Dangerous.
Jamie, pull that up. Yeah. I mean, can it be more dangerous than doing that same exact thing on horses?
Mm. If you're on like cement, maybe you can make that argument.
Yeah, it was cement.
Yeah.
It was cement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there used to be bike polo. They raised enough money to evict the bike polo people and send them elsewhere. So the proceeds from the tournaments are going towards building up their local park.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking is, I think in order to have a great experience at every one of these tournaments and in order to build up these tournaments, I would almost wonder if it would make sense to hire a tournament director for every tournament. Meaning like, okay, Denver Open was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You have somebody that you find from the local community.
Right.
And you say, we will pay you a $50,000 salary.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also keep, say, some commission of sponsorships that you are able to bring in. So that way you have somebody who's working on the details of this one event for the whole year, as well as looking at getting local sponsors that can work with the national sponsors that the PPA had.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Beer City as a pro tournament is so loved, because
right.
There is the attention to detail
yeah.
rather than kind of just like the cookie cutter tournament, right. And it's traveling
like,
circus.
So it's not like Paul and Andrea are running multiple tournaments throughout the year. It's like this is their baby. This is the one Paul they care does. About. Does I think, he?
I think he but might be running like scale, three or right. four and like some smaller ones right. throughout the year.
But if you ask him, how are you prioritizing though? Like this is definitely like his baby.
It's right? all about the Beer City Open.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's one of my favorite tournaments of the year. My dad and mom got to come. My dad loves coming to the Beer City Open because he leaves Michigan with like 500 pounds of blueberries.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating.
No cherries?
No, he's a blueberry guy.
Okay.
Michigan's so he known gives for away. Cherries, so,
apparently.
Michigan's known for their blueberries, man. It's the best blueberries in the world.
Apparently. From Michigan. Yeah, but you have to buy them on like the side of a highway. That's the key.
Well...
Same that with the cherries.
Yeah, that is kind of true.
It's like local farmers who like come out to the side of the road. You got to like find the right ones.
Yeah. So they road tripped back. I didn't have a car there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, can you guys give me a ride from this place that we went to dinner back to the hotel? My dad was like, no, I have 500 pounds of blueberries in the backseat. There's no space for you. I had to Uber.
Seriously.
I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. He bought.
Good dad.
I think right the there. Actual number was 450 pounds of blueberries.
Okay. Is he going to like sell those? Is he going to, is he like a blueberry dealer?
Who knows what he's doing, but he gives some blueberries away to people.
Yeah. Does he listen to this podcast?
I think so.
Okay.
Say what you need to say.
He's a pretty funny dude. I'd like to get him on the pod one time.
That'd be wild. That would be wild.
Between the tweets and like the blueberry dealing, I'm pretty intrigued by this guy.
We should have a next year Father's Day episode. Your dad, right. My dad.
I don't think my dad wants anything to do with the podcast, but if we could get him on, he'd be
all right, we'll get somebody's dad then. Yeah, my dad and somebody's dad.
Just a fake dad. We can arrange that. Yeah.
So eats a bunch of blueberries, slings the blueberries, freezes the blueberries. That's the biggest key.
Right. That was going to be my main question. Like, how does he maintain them? But
he has a freezer that's like half the size of this room.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So Beer City was good. there were some that. interesting things. I liked Andrea tweeting out that the schedule for center court is Altoff.
Yeah, right.
Altoff.
And then she'd just tweet, Altoff is on.
Yes. Yeah. And those would get tons of likes.
Yeah, yeah. That made me jump on the stream.
I thought I had a clever one. Altoff on center court is Thrust CTV.
Yeah, I saw that. That was good. Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I wanted the a little golf clap. Yeah, I tried to do that.
I haven't put we just pulled a bunch of clips of just Altoff either like screaming or staring people down or hip thrusting.
Walking to
so
the
just
net.
Gonna do like a montage of that. Just haven't gotten around to it yet. So that's in the hopper.
Yeah. I'm still salty about Altoff not getting picked challenger. Altoff is a 100% challenger player, charismatic, will coach up your whole team. Like GMs, if you're listening, you got to pick up Altoff and you will do better. His duper is down now because he's been playing senior pros, and if a senior pro gets half of a point off of Altoff, his duper goes down.
Right.
Pre-algorithm changes.
Yeah. Which is all going to change here soon. But,
So, yeah. Altoff was he played well too. Him and Big Papa Jimmy had a decent tournament. Yeah.
But after like just on the MLP note, like after the first event, GMs can go pick up players that are, you know, registered, whatever, who enter the draft, and they can just add them to the team, essentially like signing a free agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd imagine like Altoff might be up there, Callen probably.
I mean,
especially after all the noise that was made over him not being drafted, I feel like he's going to be the first person to get picked up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who are like shooting their shot with some, I guess what I would call, no offense, like some random picks.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work out well,
they'll make some changes. Yeah.
So another, I would just think that there's a handful of people that are going too much for the shiny new object and not quite enough for what you know is.
Consistency. mm-hmm. building a strong foundation with players who have that experience.
For sure.
Yeah. I guess it depends on where you are in standings and what your goals are for that season, right?
Yeah. If you're low in the standings, you have to shoot your shot.
Yeah.
But yeah. Right. I would say Callen has to for sure get in.
Okay. So Jesse Irvin takes a ball to the head and does not pass concussion protocol. Is that real? Is that a thing? Can a pickleball hit you that hard that you could potentially have a concussion?
So I would have said no.
Right?
But last week in Denver, we were talking about this story. It involves Matt Wright and Timothy Nelson.
Okay. Like Nasty Nelson, the Nelson?
Like Nasty Nelson.
Yeah.
So this was 2019 Nationals. And, you know, Timothy Nelson was known for sending some shots high and tight and just murdering the ball at people. Including on the serves, right? Uh-huh. Hence the Nasty Nelson. He and Joey Farias played Matt Wright and Daniel Moore, 2019 Nationals, Indian Wells. And on the second or third point of the match, Tim takes a low ball and hits it as hard as he can, like towards Matt's face. Mm-hmm. And Matt barely gets out of the way, or he's kind of like anticipating it getting and gets out of the way. And this ball, according to Matt and Joey, who are on opposite sides of this, they both say this ball sailed over the fence yeah. at one of those courts in Indian Wells. Mm-hmm. And if you know those courts in Indian Wells, those are enormous courts. Like, that is a difficult thing to do. Yeah. You almost have to try to do that. And Matt turns to Dan and says, just so you know, I'm going to get him back at some point during this match. Like, and Dan's like, yeah, sure, yeah, as you should. And I think Joey even overheard it. He's like, yeah, probably makes sense. And so Dan and Matt start kind of like rolling. It's mm-hmm. like 11-3, like 9-3 or something, and they're serving. Matt goes to Dan. He's like, I might not get another shot at this. Sitting dink, Matt takes a windup and hits it as hard as he possibly can. And Tim kind of saw it coming, turns, and it clocks him in the temple.
Yeah.
He's direct down. Shot. On the ground, sunglasses broken, everything.
Really?
He's like, he gets up. Joey also goes to Matt. He goes, nice shot. Before he knew that Tim was messed up.
Right.
Like, he's on the ground, and then within like 2 minutes, he's vomiting.
Really?
He is like 100% concussed. Like, he was vomiting, is leaving piles on the court. That's how the story goes. That's what I've Matt's told me.
So you weren't
that's,
there.
I was this not is, there. That's what answer. Matt okay. told me. That's what Joey Farias told me. Like, he got lit up so bad and mm-hmm. like clearly concussed. So I would have before that, if I didn't know that story, I would have said there's no way that a pickleball can concuss you.
Right.
But when Jesse got hit that hard by an overhead from 14 feet away, I was like, yeah, I can see that because yeah. it wasn't a bony part of the face, right?
Were you guys playing Dura or Franklin?
We were playing with a Dura.
Yeah.
So it didn't get her in the forehead. She actually turned enough to get her kind of like on the soft part of the eye,
uh-huh.
like of the eyebrow. So that, I think, you know, caused her to not pass concussion right. protocol. Like right. we were, she did not want to tell, when I was on the court with her, she didn't want to tell those guys anything. She didn't even want to talk to them.
Yeah.
She's like, she wanted them to go away because she wanted to keep playing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh yeah, for sure. She wanted nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
She's like, we're going to battle. And, but she just, it was the right choice to not play, but she was so tough. She wasn't giving them anything.
Right.
Like, she wasn't like, yeah, I think I have a concussion. She made those doctors work for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she wanted to play. She wanted to play the next day, but like, it was not, she was not able to play.
Right. Right.
So just wild.
I'm surprised there is even like, is a concussion protocol. Like just.
That's news to me. I mean, yeah. I think it's maybe concussion protocol is the same thing for every sport.
I don't know. Maybe you can just.
I mean, a concussion is a concussion regardless of what happens or
Right.
Or what sport you're playing.
Right, yeah. But that was wild. Okay, speaking of body bags, you had an interesting – was that one from Beer City? So you hit Nasty Nelson on Neil Mederata, hit him in a vulnerable spot. It's on social. You can go on Zane or our Instagram and see that right now. But that was at Beer City.
That was at Beer City.
Was that in an actual match, like that in the draw?
That was in an actual match. Yeah. So I'll give you some context. All right, I'll give you some context.
That was deliberate, right? Okay.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 1,000%. So this is what happened.
So good.
Me and Jay were playing against Neil and Jerry. And me, Neil, and Jerry have played forever. Like when I was living in Wisconsin, that was like our normal group. We'd play me, Sincola, Neil, and Jerry. And so I know all the – you know, I know all their stuff. I know Neil's trolliness. Like, I actually think Neil's funny. I think Neil's funny. He rubs people the wrong way, but like, I have zero problem with Neil. So Neil was doing his thing. He was chirping. He was doing all this stuff. They win the second point of the match, and Neil goes, "Ooh wee wee," because Jay is French.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I just thought I would explain it. And they're good players. If you don't know their tendencies, they have quick hands, good flips. Like they're very, very tricky to play against. And Neil's beaten Jay and Tyson before. Jerry's played good pickleball. And so we win the first game. They play a really good game in the second game. And there's some guy in the crowd. I don't know who it is, but he was really starting to piss me off because he was just being annoying. Mm-hmm. And so I was starting to get a little pissed off. We lose the second game. We are playing somewhat close in the third game. And this guy is just going to town saying dumb stuff. And so also Neil had gotten warnings from the ref for taunting. This guy in the crowd had been told to shut up by the ref like three times. And then the fourth time, I just told him to shut up.
But do you know who he was? Was he like one of Neil's buddies or something like that?
I don't know who. Like he was clearly cheering for like Neil and Jerry, but like wasn't being funny. And that was what I took offense to.
Yeah.
So I paused this match for like 30 seconds to talk to this guy.
Really?
But yeah, there was a big crowd. I was like, hey, I don't know who you are, but like I'm friends with Neil. I'm friends with Jerry. I don't know who you are. I think Neil's funny. I don't think you're funny. I think Jeff Warnick is funny. I don't think you're funny. Johnny Goldberg, funny. You, annoying. Be quiet. Yeah. And then he's quiet.
So he was like, oh, okay, all right.
He was quiet after that. Also, at the end of the match, he did give me a nux too. So we're cool now, but I was annoyed.
But you just didn't figure out who this guy was?
One of Neil and Jerry's friends.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, it was like a chirpy match as we knew it would be.
Right.
And Neil was talking the whole time. This guy was talking the whole time. It was a close match. We win the first, lose the second. We're down like 4-5 in the third. We win two, get to the side switch. We win one more point. Neil calls a timeout. We win three more points. We're at 10. Neil calls a timeout. We lose the next point out of the timeout. It's 10-5-2. We're walking back to serve. I ask Jay. I was like, Jay, can I nasty Nelson him? I didn't really understand what Jay said. All I heard was like, normally I would say no. And then I stopped listening and I just rocketed one at him and I connected on 10-5-2 in game three. And, Neil was not stoked, but he was nice enough to send me the footage of that.
Oh, that was his footage?
Yeah. He was the one who was recording it. So like,
good sport. Game, gotta respect game. If you get nasty Nelson like that, you got to release the footage.
If you're going to talk crap the whole time and get nasty Nelson, game respect game. He sent me the clip. It was good.
What was the final match score?
It was like 11-3, 3-11, 10-5 or something, or 11-5, something like that.
Yeah.
But they played well.
No, Neil's, he's like sneaky pretty good. I mean, obviously he would train with you guys, so you're going to be at least decent. And he's notorious for the eating the bag of potato chips between games when him and Brandon French took down, I think it was Tyson and Jay.
Yeah, it was Tyson and Jay.
Yeah. I don't remember. Was that like Denver maybe or something like that?
I don't know. It was sometime last year.
Or it was Dallas.
Maybe.
But yeah.
Yeah, so. he's a legend in his own way.
That's when he came onto my radar. I assume he's been playing for a while.
He's been playing for, you know, maybe 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
This is the third Nasty Nelson I've ever attempted in a real tournament. The first one was in Hilton Head, where me and Altoff were playing against Grant Bond and Caden Seward. And might have been a game to 15, and we were up like
four. You definitely win at Grant.
We were up like 14 to 1. It was like 14-1-1. And Grant calls a timeout. I'm like, all right, sure, fine, whatever. And then we get back. The ref goes 14-1-1. And then Grant calls another timeout. I was like, all right. Now I'm pissed off. Yeah. Now that was just doing this to be an a-hole.
Yeah.
And then I'm serving to Grant, and Caden's staying up there. And I'm like, Caden has got to be the hardest person to hit with a Nasty Nelson. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to try.
Yeah.
And so I missed him. I did miss him on that one. The other time, I tried a Nasty Nelson, Brandon French, also missed. So this is the first real tournament connection I've made. But I did warm it up that morning, Saturday morning, against James Ignatowicz.
Uh-huh.
I nailed him first point of the warm-up with a Nasty Nelson. So I was warm on that shot this time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, cool. We just did a sick read for Viore. It was from the heart from Zane. And then apparently we weren't recording.
It's all good. Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So I've been wearing Viore stuff for like 18 months at this point, and it is so unbelievably comfortable. The shorts are incredible, and the shirts are great too. Like, a lot of times you get those shirts and they start out really soft and comfortable, and then you put them through the washer a couple times and it's gone. But I've had this for like 18 months, wore it about a million times, washed it about a million times, and it is still feels like the very first day that I got it. Unbelievably comfortable. Love it.
Yeah, no, we were wearing Viore to record before they were even a sponsor of the pod, which we're a fan of, though. I'm wearing my pants right now. But you can go to viore.com/thedink for 20% off your first purchase. And we get free shipping on orders over $75. And that's VUORI.com/thedink, viore.com/thedink.
Yeah, Viore, we appreciate you, but you guys probably didn't need to pay us for this.
Yeah, send us more product.
All right. What I'm hearing, besides the fact that you're good at Nasty Nelsons, or at least have a 50% success rate, is that people can get under your skin. Is that true?
Sure. Go for it. You might get Nasty Nelsoned.
Yeah.
Go for it.
You're good at responding to it, though.
So here's the thing.
Okay.
Riley was talking about how I want to legitimize the sport. You know, tapping paddles is not that's not professional. I want to continue to legitimize this sport. And so if you're not paying attention up at the net, I think that a Nasty Nelson can be an actual play. Like an actual play to actually try and get points.
Sure, why not?
I'm curious if we actually start to see this in the future more.
I mean, I could see it eventually. It's like if people actually started doing it consistently, there'd be some sort of like technical foul or something like that.
No, you can't. But no.
But you could see that.
Oh, yeah, well, I could see it. I'm no fan of the USAPA rulebook keepers over there. I wouldn't put anything past them.
Yeah. It's the most satisfying thing when you do it successfully. But if you miss, you can, no matter what, you know your partner is just staring you down. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it is a very, very small chance of success.
Yeah.
But when you pull it off.
Yeah. But if you just did like that to somebody you didn't know or had zero history with, like if you're just at a random amateur tournament, you go for a Nasty Nelson.
It's a legit play, bro.
Yeah.
It's a legit play.
That's what they said about the chainsaw serve, and I could not stand that.
Well, you have to think. Normally, you lose about 60% of your serving points. But if you could go, if you were 50-50 on Nasty Nelsons, that trade-off's worth it. Numbers. Stats.
But your first serve.
Doesn't matter which serve it is.
Give away possession for Nasty Nelson?
If it's all about, it doesn't matter. The result isn't what matters. It's the percentages of success. So, like, yeah, you might fail, but that doesn't mean that it was a bad decision necessarily.
All right. I want to see you do more of it.
I don't know if I'm 50-50 on it, though.
Yeah.
I'll practice.
Yeah.
I did miss one today.
Start working on it.
I'll start working on it.
All right. What else about Beer City? Any other takeaways? I wish I would have gone.
It's so a tired. Fun one.
There's too much traveling. You're going to Seattle this weekend, right?
I am not.
Oh, you're not?
Nope.
I thought you tweeted that you were. Did I just make that up?
I don't think that I tweeted that.
What are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to Boston, visiting my aunt in Boston.
When are you leaving?
On Thursday.
Can we play singles tomorrow?
No. I'm already playing tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Where are you playing?
At Sean's house, the Stop Alzheimer's Now guy.
He lives around here?
He lives a little bit outside of town. He's got a beautiful court over at his place. Mm-hmm. And we are lucky enough to play there a couple times a week.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Got the inn and all the private courts.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about this Real Clear Stats Best Hands Index?
Yeah. So Ben from Real Clear Stats put together a couple of posts, which I found pretty interesting. He broke down the Premier and Challenger, basically Best Hands Index, mm-hmm. which is a single calculation quantifying pickleball doubles hand speeds across both gender and mixed doubles. It equally values each player's skill in four categories: firefight initiations, which is how many firefights you initiated, how many you won versus how many you lost, your counters, how many you won versus how many you lost, your last shot net margin, which is how many like winning shots versus losing shots, and how many misses. Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, Ben was number one in the men's, Riley number two. Now guess the next three.
Next three is Dylan.
Not on there.
J-Dub.
Number five.
Who would be like a random one? Okay. How far back does this data go?
All of season one.
All of season one, MLP.
Yes, only MLPs.
Challenger and Premier, or are we just talking Premier right now?
Only Premier.
Is Stocksford up there?
Nope.
I imagine you're bringing it up because you're on there.
No, well, I mean, I think I'm on something or another, but no. So I don't think you would have guessed it. And I think this is interesting, but Julian was number four.
Okay.
And Tyson came in behind Ben and Riley in the best hands index.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's interesting. I've actually been watching his game a lot lately. He, and even, you know, he has a million like instructional YouTube videos, and he always talks about like crucial to his game is his like backhand punch, mm-hmm. like this punch shot. And you don't hear a lot of other people talk about it too much. And it's something that I've been trying to do more of, but basically it just keeps you in it, right? It's not like you're going to try and put it away, but it's just a really efficient shot to just stay in the firefight. And yeah. I feel like he's really good at that. And then it also gives you an opportunity to maybe back up, give yourself a little bit more space, and then just be better positioned to continue out and try to win that exchange.
Yeah, I mean he doesn't miss a whole lot. He's not known as a phenomenal counterer, right? Like you don't know Tyson as somebody who's like got the best hands on tour, third best hands on tour. But he's very patient and he's probably got a really good initiations net margin where like he's really only speeding up when he knows he's got a good ball. And he does a good job of hiding his like flaws, right? Sliding one way or another or for defending some of those speed ups. So all right, who do you think has the best counters?
Riley, for sure.
Actually, wait, I might be misreading this. Never mind, we're going to move on.
Wait, what'd you thought it was the best counters, and then it's just not.
Well, so I'm reading it, and it says firefights counters margin, JW Johnson. but then it says 10th. So I think I'm misreading that.
Yeah.
Initiations were Ben 130 was the best with mm-hmm. when he initiated. I was second, Riley third, J-Dub fourth.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to speed it up more apparently.
Yeah. And when you're speeding up, how much are you thinking about the location on that person and how much does that change person to person? Are you always saying, hey, I'm going left shoulder? Or are you actively like ahead of a match or within a match thinking, hey, I know this person, I know their game, I'm going to keep targeting them at this specific spot?
Yeah, we all know each other's tendencies, right? We all know where, you know, somebody sits a little bit more on their backhand or their yeah. forehand or whatever, or somebody's really difficult to speed the ball up at. So we all know that. So it becomes a little bit of game theory, mm-hmm. right? So you might send something to their strength early on, hoping that maybe they start to cover their strength a little bit,
right.
opening up the weakness mm-hmm. later. It's a fun exercise of game theory too.
Yeah.
Speed ups are, because now our hands are all so quick. You really have to sort of fool somebody to have right. an advantage.
Yeah.
Get them thinking you're going one way and then you go another, going into the strengths because you think that they're going to be covering their weakness.
It's challenging to have the presence of mind to be strategic about where you're sending a speed up. I think a lot of amateurs, it's like if you get that opportunity, it's like, okay, just pull trigger, mm-hmm. right? Who cares where it goes? Let's just try and keep it in the court, put some pace on it.
To a certain extent, that's probably the best way to play at the amateur level when you're not playing yeah. the same people over and over. You want to just play the ball, right? Mm-hmm. If you get an attackable ball, know your own patterns well enough that you can win 51% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might be – you're probably better off at the amateur level just doing you. The problem is if I just do me to J-Dub, he's going to murder me. So there comes a point where you're confident enough and you know exactly which shots you can and can't hit where you do need to start adjusting to the opponent.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What do you think? Okay, so there are some new stats emerging, that being one of them. I think like the obvious one, which isn't that – you know, groundbreaking, but I think it's an important one, is, you know, limiting unforced errors. What are some of the stats that you've seen emerge lately that you think are like the most insightful, or maybe to contextualize it? Like if you were to have to draft in Major League Pickleball just based off of one of these newer stats, what would be one of those stats that you think tells the most important story?
Well, I think something that was interesting was another one of Real Clear Stats posts recently, which was at the challenger level. So it was comparing season one at the premier level and the challenger level. So at the premier level, 22% of shots or rallies ended in winners, 32% unforced errors, 46-ish% forced errors.
Say the first one again.
22% winners. And these are like rounded.
Mm-hmm.
32% unforced errors, 46% forced errors.
Hmm.
At the challenger level, hold your horses.
A forced error being like if you go for a speed up and just send it right into the net, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not calling that an unforced error?
That'd be an unforced error. If you're speeding the ball up, and an unforced error is like it's an easy ball, you try to do something and you just missed, or you missed a dink.
Yeah.
A forced error would be like you have an overhead, you hit it right at me and I'm not able to get it back. I get a paddle on it, but I'm not able to get it back.
Mm, okay.
At the challenger level, the winner's percentage was about the same, 22%. The unforced errors rate went up from 32% to 37%.
Mm-hmm.
So, challenger, they're just making more errors.
Not super surprising.
Right.
I could see that disparity being even higher. I probably would have guessed it's mm-hmm. an even larger disparity. But
so I think that's an interesting stat is, you know, how safe somebody's playing. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's indicative of how well they'll do in Premier or Challenger.
Right.
I do think that this best hands index is quite interesting. So let's go with the women.
Okay.
Who do you think had the best hands in MLP season one?
Lacey.
Not top five.
I tried to go with something you wouldn't expect.
This one's probably a little bit more predictable than the guys. Other than the guys were predictable in 1-2 for sure.
Okay, Anna Lee, Anna Bright, Catherine Perrino.
We got number one, Catherine Parento. Number two, Anna Lee. Number three, Etta Wright. Four, Koopy Nation. Mm-hmm. Five, Jessie Irvine. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, this, I think, was released after the draft.
Okay.
Guess who had the best hands season one in Challenger?
Pablo.
Callan.
Ooh.
Callan, best hands, did not even get drafted.
Yep.
That's nuts. So Challenger was Callan Dawson, Connor Garnett, Stefan Auvergne, Ben Newell, Todd Fote. Kind of makes sense.
Okay.
The women were Corinne Carr, Jeannie Arakina, Alex Trung, Jilly B, and Emily Ackerman. I think it's an interesting thing. You know, there's a lot that – obviously there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot that's not picked up. There's certainly something to the fact that you might not speed up at somebody or give them the opportunity since their hands are so good. You might be more reluctant to speed up at somebody like Ben or J-Dub. There's so many nuances to this, but I think overall pretty accurate of who has good hands.
Yeah.
So okay. I'll be curious to see what they keep coming out with.
Well, okay, but you didn't answer my original question.
Yeah, I forgot what that was.
What do you think is the most important of these more newer statistics that we're seeing? If you were to draft and you could only have one data point. Would it be best hands? Would it be unforced errors?
It wouldn't be unforced errors. I would say I would like to see – I don't know if this exists, but it would be interesting to profile players based on where they miss and their likelihood of success, meaning like this person misses wide 12% of the time, long 35% of the time, net 53% of the time, something like that, right? I think there could be some interesting conclusions drawn from there. And I would guess that you'd seeing the best players. The best players, I bet, have their unforced errors going long more than they're going short or more than they're going wide.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I wonder if one day we'll have technology good enough to where, you know, you can sort of see the power, the speed of the ball, the trajectory of it, and determine whether that ball, had it not been touched, would land in or out. And then look at each individual player and their ability to let out balls go or play balls that would have been out and give their opponent a second chance. Because I think it's like one of the most underrated skills, especially like at the amateur level, is are you able to identify an out ball and know to just let it go?
Mm-hmm. I think you have that in baseball, right, where they're able to judge the spin rate of the pitch. I don't know if you can judge the spin rate of the hit, but you can see exit velocity and angle, and then they determine where they think exactly how far that ball is going to go.
Yep.
That's how they've been measuring home run distance for a while now. Mm-hmm. I think you should be able to back into that. The hardest part would be measuring the spin. You would need a what's the type of camera? There's a very specific type of camera that can measure spin of a baseball that's now in every single MLB park.
Yeah.
You would need that for the spin, but everything else you could sort of back into. You could back into how fast the ball was going. You could have a camera that could measure the height at impact. Like, you could probably see how – you could probably know exactly how far that ball was going to go mm-hmm. if it wasn't for wind or spin. Mm-hmm. Given in current technology, I bet you could do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know I'm not a camera guy. I don't do well with cameras.
Well, neither do I.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit about this APP. So APP announced a couple weeks ago that they were doing the Swedish Open. They recently announced they're going to be broadcasting in mainland China. They've got the Mexico Open. They've got the English Open. They're quietly building essentially like a global presence. Do you think there's some strategy there where they're like, all right, you know what? Fine. PPA, Premier Tour in the US, MLP, they're kind of ranked ahead of us as well. Is there a play to kind of go international and build out a global tour and then come back to the US once you have a presence and you have an audience that extends beyond the US?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's smart.
That's right? What I would do if I were them.
I think it's smart.
I would just keep establishing, you know, for every country, I'm going to do the X Open and build up a global tour.
Mm-hmm. The APP, you know, French Open, whatever.
Yeah. The Italian Open.
The only problem is, you know, what about – is there enough of an advantage of being the first mover there to – when the PPA decides to do it,
yeah.
Like, are they enough ahead that the PPA can't just – do they have enough, like, loyalty, brand loyalty and whatever it is they need? Do they have enough to stay ahead of the PPA when mm-hmm. – because if they do well, you know, the PPA is going to try and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they can do it. They can do well now. I'd be curious if it's enough of an advantage to move first to keep others away. I would guess probably not.
I think there's a lot that comes with just getting the name of Italian Open, French Open, you know.
That's true. I wonder how long
they establish themselves as like the one that they care about in that respective market.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point. Just to have the name.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, the U.S. Open here. Yeah.
I mean, if you can be the first one in Asia, I mean, I think everybody sort of agrees that like the real opportunities as far as expansion go at the pro level is Asia. And then I think like India. So if you can go and establish yourself there, I mean.
Yeah, it's interesting. India is an interesting case. I'm curious how much it's growing. I know people brought pickleball to India several years ago. I mean, when I was with ProLite, a Wisconsin company, mm-hmm. they had influencers or ambassadors in India like 6-7 years ago.
Yep.
So I wonder if it's like boomed yet. I don't have visibility into that.
Oh, we've talked about this before, but like the Indian Open looks like it's pretty.
It's intense.
I think that what it was, right?
It's intense. That's for sure.
We've got the Indian Ben Johns over there.
Indian Ben Johns.
Yeah. Somebody had him on a podcast. And
really?
It'd be interesting to get him on. See what he has to say.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, these – and then you got to have, like, that superstar in that respective market to help, like, carry the sport, right? Mm-hmm. And then have them come over to the U.S. and actually win something.
That would be huge, but I don't see any international player coming over here
yeah,
and winning anything
just isn't there yet.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Because they don't have – unless they're living here, right?
Right.
You have
right.
great international players here, mm-hmm. but you cannot train somewhere else
yeah.
and come win a tournament here.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Right.
For now. Yeah.
I mean, I think that like even just for U.S. players, like if you're not training every day with – strong talent, you're just going to be at a significant disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the play? What do you think of the tournaments? Like, I don't know. I'm curious your perspective on it.
I think it's really smart. I think it's probably the best opportunity they have to still go toe to toe with MLP and PPA.
Yeah. I know the English Open is coming up pretty quickly, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. I think they've had it for a few years now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know they did. I talked to them. I was going to go in 2020, I think.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. In 2020.
Right.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty cool.
I think it makes
I hope they own those names, right? It'd be important to have like the ownership over those naming rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think about this? So nobody's ever brought this up. And as soon as I thought about it, I was like, that's pretty interesting. And I'm surprised it hasn't been suggested previously. But so how about this first? Rank the events, right? Like men's doubles, men's singles, women's doubles, women's mixed. Like rank those in order of what you think people enjoy watching the most.
Women's doubles, mixed doubles, men's doubles, women's and men's singles are probably pretty even.
You think mixed above men's doubles?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I personally like watching mixed the most.
Yeah.
But I think that mixed doubles is a better showcase. It's a doubles event that can better showcase athleticism,
mm-hmm.
because there's more dynamic movements of, you know, guys trying to cover a lot of court, Berts, Ernies, all that stuff. I think that women's doubles is the most interesting to watch because they generally play from a couple feet behind the kitchen and you have those long extended firefights.
Yep.
Men's can be pretty boring because you have to be so careful with when you speed the ball up. It's a little bit slower because when you speed the ball up to Deckel, like he's going to punch that ball down nicely. Mm-hmm. Like, and the women hit mostly through the court. They mostly hit what I call hitting out. The guys sort of hit down because they're hovering on that line a little bit more.
Yeah.
So you don't have nearly as many of those, you know, 10 shot quick exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'd put men's doubles last of the doubles events.
Okay.
And
that doesn't tee up my point very well, but I'm going to make it anyway. I think it would be interesting to have the Major League Pickleball format, but completely separated by genders, where it's just men's Major League Pickleball, four players to a team, women's Major League Pickleball, four players to a team. You know, every other major sport, they separate genders. This is pretty interesting in that, like, combining women and men is actually a staple in pickleball, whether on the tour or Major League Pickleball.
Yeah, I mean, combining women and men in other sports just doesn't work as well.
Right.
Right? Like, this, I guess got to be somewhat careful, but, like, the physical advantages in pickleball are not nearly as important as they are in other sports.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a WNBA player cannot possibly, like, go play in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But, like, the guys play with girls all the time as a fourth player in rec play and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, we're a little bit better, but we're not, like, game-breakingly better.
Right.
So it's the level is enough to be competitive, which, you know, even in tennis, I think that guys are – it's mixed doubles is boring to watch because the guys are able to just murder the serves past the women a lot of the time. I don't think it's nearly as interesting as mixed doubles in pickleball.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say, like, you know, I wonder if there are other sports where men and women are as closely matched. You know, you have things like co-ed running or mixed running, right? Relay races where there's two women and two men or even amount of men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I do think that that's something that is unique to pickleball, and it's awesome that women are able to compete at the nearly same level as the guys.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes this sport so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I wonder what that would look like if there was a men's tour and a women's tour.
Yeah.
Which one would you watch?
I just think it would be cool to sort of scheme the drafts from that lens, right? Where you're trying to combine the best four men and the best four women. I think it would change the dynamic a bit and it would just be interesting.
That'd be, I mean, you know, I like all the experiments. It'd be cool to do. I mean, MLP could definitely do like an exhibition weekend where there's only guys, exhibition weekend where there's only girls. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happened with these Pickleball for America, or no, not Pickleball for America. The Pickle for Social. Yeah. Pickle for Social.
Yeah.
They more or less did it. I don't know what their format was.
Yeah. But I don't know. I thought it was just like exhibition.
Yeah. It's pretty cool though.
Yeah.
Looks like that was a pretty, pretty cool deal. Mm-hmm. They played in Fenway. They played in Oracle out in San Francisco, and there's one more coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There was a little controversy around which players could play and the PPA restricting some but allowing others and who they were able to actually get for that exhibition. But they ended up with what, like four top women? What was it? Anna Lee, Simone, Anna Bright, Paris?
For
Fenway?
In Boston, right?
Yeah.
I think so. I don't remember who the guys were.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's a little bit of a lose-lose for the PPA because if they allow their players to go play, then they're giving legitimacy to this other league and this other event, I know, paid very, very generously.
Yep, I heard that.
And so if you disallow them from playing, well then...
Like crazy appearance fees that we've never seen before.
Yeah, next level appearance fees.
Right. Which if I got restricted from, I would be pretty upset.
Right. So do you allow your players to go do it and help to build this exhibition series?
I don't know.
Do you disallow them and piss them off? You also
have to think about who that is. They are the same group that purchased the U.S. Open or, mm-hmm. you know, merged with the U.S. Open. And I imagine they have more plans within Pro Pickleball as well.
And I'd also imagine that they're not on the best of terms and wanting to work together, particularly.
Right.
Given that relationship seemed to have fallen through between the U.S. Open and PBA.
Yeah. They were supposed to somehow work together. But I guess like
PBA with the new ownership. PBA players were allowed to play the U.S. Open in 2022. We were not given clearance to play the U.S. Open in 2023.
Would you have played it if you had clearance?
Probably
would have had to look at the field and see who actually was competing before you.
No, I probably wouldn't have played.
No.
I really, really dislike how singles is a week ahead of doubles.
Yeah, it's such an odd format. It's more of like a week-long festival than it is. Like
but I'm not there for that. There's too many tournaments. Like, it used to be cool. It used to be great when there were only a handful of pro tournaments. You could go. You'd play all week with people that you only saw a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I'm sick of seeing you every weekend. Like, I don't want to hang out with you. So it's not – the novelty of having all the pros in one place is gone, right? It used to be – it only happened a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. It was a festival. I played singles on Sunday. I'd hang around. I'd get really good practice that I couldn't get back at home.
Yeah.
Now that's done.
Right.
Right. So other than that, I mean, I like the tournament. It is – they do a great job of packing that venue, that center court. It's like – that's probably the most electric venue in pickleball.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever played –
at the U.S. Open, no.
Yeah? Mm-mm. Have you ever been?
No. Mm-mm.
Will you ever go?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, I mean, like, the importance of that event has fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right?
Yeah. Starting in, what, 20?
Besides MLP... which each of those events seems to be very important, and it seems to become – every one of those is a focal point. Everybody tunes in. They want to know what happens. And part of that is because, you know, it's only six times a year.
Well, and it's more money than anything else too.
Uh-huh. And it's a different – yeah. And so do you think there's any other individual events in your mind that – carry that importance, that create that focal point within the pickleball community where when it comes around once a year, everybody tunes in and feels like this one matters more than the others?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for amateurs, it's still the U.S. Open and Indian Wells.
Uh-huh.
doesn't really exist in the pro game right now.
Well, Indian Wells is moving to Dallas now.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Indian Wells just feels like another PPA event.
Right? Like, what did it used to be? Nationals, U.S. Open.
It used to be Nationals,
the US Utah Open. One. What was that one? Tournament
of
Champions.
There was TOC, and then there was either the Atlanta Open or the Texas Open. So there were kind of like five main big prize money events.
Right.
Now it doesn't feel like any of them are really particularly larger than the other, with the exception of
exactly
MLPs. I think it would be pretty cool to know to have your majors. And there are majors on the PPA schedule, but they don't
feel much different. Ask the average person, I mean, most people would not be able to tell you what the majors are.
No. I'm not even quite sure what the majors are.
Yeah, right.
I've got it on a spreadsheet somewhere. Don't worry.
Yeah. But like in every other sport, you know, there's a handful of events that are, you know, placed on a pedestal. And those are important to carrying the sport forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that's probably something that's important for PPA, MLP, APP, all these to do. I will say playing at Flushing Meadows last year on the APP felt, I guess, more important than others because it was a larger purse, essentially.
Wait, where is Flushing Meadows?
New York.
But is that the same as Arthur Ashe? Arthur Ashe is in Flushing Meadows?
Yes. Yeah. Flushing Meadows, I think, is the park.
Got it.
That has the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center.
Yeah, and Arthur Ashe is the stadium in kind of like the middle of it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
So that one felt bigger because it was the biggest of the APP tournaments.
Yeah, but then nobody comes in. There's no fans.
There were no fans, right. So, I mean, like for me, it felt bigger, but maybe that didn't translate.
Right.
I think that goes back to like one of our very first conversations. Like maybe for these majors, maybe that's where you – pay somebody a salary to really take this one tournament and grow it to something different and
treat
promote
it like its own business, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what it is in other sports. There's the ATP, Association of Tennis Professionals, where these tournaments are under the ATP umbrella and ATP players go play. But every single one of those tournaments has its own dedicated tournament director with mm-hmm. huge staff, everything,
mm-hmm.
which is how they're able to put on such a big production.
Right.
It's not the ATP tour that's going on one weekend to Hamburg on the next weekend to Singapore. It's not their traveling circus. It's, you know, maybe a handful of executives or staff members from ATP are at each of these things.
Yeah.
But the tournament directors have some autonomy to do what it is they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The PPA used to do, I mean, at least one of the years they did, I think it was 2021 Masters was sort of like, you know, that was where all the points culminated. And I'm sure they still do this, but in that year, they did a better job of explaining the narrative of who is in the lead, what needed to happen at the Masters to determine who won. You know, mixed doubles for the year, women's doubles for the year. And there was this drama around, was it going to be Ben and Anna Lee? Or maybe it was Ben and – it would have been Ben and Simone. Yeah, it would have been Ben and Simone or Matt and Lucy who won that year points-wise. And leading up to that point, it was almost like a given. At least the perception was that it was going to be Ben and Simone. They were the best. And then Matt and Lucy pulled it out and ended up being the winners for the year. And there was drama around that and people cared. But I feel like we've – lost that since then, and nobody really cares about like the overall standings throughout the course of the year, right?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that when that happened.
Part of the problem is like, I think it's just, you know, you need to figure out how to make fans care, and I don't think you can make them care consistently across, you know, 30 events throughout the year. Like,
they care about the slams. Do you really care?
Yeah, the slams. That's what I'm saying.
Do you care who's year-end number one?
No.
Not a whole
lot.
But
I was just saying that was one way to build up importance.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. That was one way to get us more engaged and care about the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think pickleball is missing slams.
Well, I agree. Yeah. And yeah, I think maybe those four, whatever you decide to have as the slams, I think you probably need your own tournament director at least to begin with.
And throughout the year, you need to build up to those throughout your messaging.
Well, I mean, the whole hard court season in the States is the U.S. Open Series, right, where you're – people are playing these tournaments, basically getting ready for the U.S. Open, and they're not inconsequential tournaments, but it's all like a chase leading up to the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Every tournament that's going on is leading up to the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
I'm just trying to solve pro pickleball here.
There we go. It's broke.
All right. Anything else you got? Thomas has to go do a homework assignment.
We just got the SAN questions. That's the main thing. Thomas, you got homework?
Yeah, man.
Isn't it like July?
Yep. All right.
He's doing his summer reading.
Okay, product management and financial statement analysis, which is technically accounting. All right. Emily Anderson asks... Support. Zane, Thomas, first off, big fan of the podcast and think it's great that you're using your platform for such a life-changing cause. With all of the excitement surrounding the draft recently, I decided to start a fantasy pickleball league with some friends and family, and I'm trying to put together a formula for scoring. Any thoughts on the best metrics to use?
I know NML does their own fantasy format where they draft a couple of players. I think you could just do it like a bracket challenge. Like you could print out the bracket and you could say who you think is going to advance in every single round and score it that way. That's not something that I've seen done. NML, what they do is they just pick – it's kind of like a one-on-one. It's slim versus gritty, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they have a draft and – check out NML. I'm going to butcher it.
yeah.
But the other way that you could do it is you just fill out a bracket like you would for March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Could be interesting. And that would probably be better for a larger group. So it seems like you said friends and family. I also don't know if this is a tournament by tournament thing or a year long chase where you like pick players. That could be an interesting thing too. Like you draft players and then you get a certain amount of points based on where they finish in their rankings or how many medals they have. There's a lot of possibilities there, but I'm with you, Emily. That seems like a cool idea.
All right. Thanks for the question, Emily. Let's go to Ricky Giardo. Even though I returned the Zane saw, so did he maybe return it in Michigan? He says, did you do a chainsaw for charity deal up at Beer City?
Yeah. So we did a, Ricky, appreciate that, man. We did a little exhibition for Pickle and Social in between the bronze matches and the gold matches where anybody from the crowd could come and attempt to return the chainsaw for...
I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They were not doing well. We even had Neil behind the court telling them which direction the ball was going to bounce.
Yeah, I heard him. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't sure who that was. Yeah, okay.
Andrea was very worried about Neil on the microphone, yeah. As she should be.
As she should be, right. Yeah.
So, nope, that was not chainsaw for Stop Alzheimer's Now. It was just a fun little exhibition, unfortunately. Otherwise, we would have earned a lot of money, a lot more money than what was up there. There was probably 75 people did that. And there's maybe five people that got it back.
Five people? Good for them. Did they get it back where, like, if it were actual match play, you would have just drilled the...
Oh, 100%. Yeah, none of them were very good returns, but they were in the court, and that is the criteria that we are using.
Yeah. Okay, this one's from Hunter Aono. Hopefully I said that right. What are your thoughts on the collegiate pickleball scene? If you could go back and play in collegiate pickleball, would you? Okay, guy, Hunter, it's one question, okay? This is like a paragraph of questions. Start there. What do you think of the collegiate pickleball scene? Would you play collegiate pickleball if it was around when you were in college?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, that'd be pretty sweet. I would hope it would be a different season than tennis, because I think there'd be a lot of crossover there. I think that if you are a student at a university listening to this, and your university does not have a pickleball club, email me. Email me. Like, I'm not even kidding. Reach out to the show, because this is an unbelievable resume builder. To be able to take initiative and say that I started a club is amazing for any employer that you're looking at.
Yep.
It's a great way to build a community at your university. Great way to make friends, be a part of something a little bit bigger. If you don't do it, also, somebody else is going to within a year, right? So this is your time. Make a collegiate pickleball club.
Yep.
Message me on Instagram if you actually do that, and I bet you we can get ProXR to sponsor your club.
Yeah.
Or at least have good conversations with them. Like, this is something that we want to do. Make a club. Try to make a club. Send me an Instagram message.
This is what you should do.
Okay.
Email the Dink team at heydink.com, because I'm actually working with a company that's building a tool that will allow people to run college pickleball clubs, and we're working with a bunch of them right now. And then we'll cross the bridge with Zane Proxer, get you guys some sponsors.
We'll get you guys hooked up. Yeah, wow, this is quite the crew. If you're making a university club team, hit us up.
Yeah. No, it's like a sick resume builder. But okay. And if you're one of those people like me who's just in a fraternity making up positions that he held, this would be a good idea. All right. This one's from Isaac.
Hold on. Hunter does have a pretty funny thing at the end. He says, also, Zane, I will donate again. Also, I'll donate again if Zane looks at the camera and says, I fucking love Utah Tech pickleball.
There you go. We better get another donation for that.
Yeah, does that count as my swear jar? Because it's one of the questions.
Yeah, he's got to match.
Well, he's going to match.
Nah.
But do I still have to make the donation?
Yeah, bro.
Fuck it.
And another one. All right. Isaac Delbury. He says, Zane, I've been playing doubles for some time now, but have recently picked up singles. I seem to frequently get beat on what seems like perfect passing shots. I've been returning balls deep and to the corners. I'm just starting to understand the concept of returning deep middle to limit the angle I give my opponent. Can you evaluate how important dinking middle in doubles is compared to out wide? You alluded to this in one of your last pods, referencing the Johns brothers and their meticulous approach to Riley and Matt. How often you go inside versus out? Thanks in advance.
Jesus, dude. It wasn't working. I'm done. I owe three, okay? I didn't listen to a word you said from that question. Right. I was trying to do the swear jar thing up there.
Well, he kind of went back and forth between his issues in singles and doubles, but let's go to the end of this question here. You alluded to this in one of your last pods, referencing the Johns brothers and their meticulous approach to Riley and Matt. How often do you go inside versus out? Thanks in advance, like on dinking, like dinking middle versus dinking wide.
So this is something that I say in clinics, where we're obsessed with hitting out wide dinks, right? And out wide dinks are great shots, but an out wide dink doesn't exist unless you keep the person honest to the middle. So middle is a great spot to open up the outside, meaning like if my opponent knows that I'm only going outside dink, outside dink, outside dink, they'll start shading over that way, right? And then no matter how good my outside dink is, they're in position. If they know that they need to cover the middle as well, that's what opens up the outside. You can also get some good miscommunications in the middle as well. As for passing shots, it really just takes a lot of pattern recognition and more play. I couldn't tell you what clicked for me in my singles in terms of covering the net. It's just recognizing which shots your opponent can and can't hit from a given scenario and adjusting your positioning accordingly. No matter what, even if I told you the solution, you wouldn't be able to do it until you've been in that situation enough times and recognizing it yourself. So it's really just a keep after it. Try to find the patterns for yourself. And that's going to depend on who you're playing as well. Some people's patterns are different than others. So anyway, if you want your question on the next episode of the pod, go ahead to stopalzheimersnow.com. Hold on. Stopalzheimersnow.org. Stopalzheimersnow.org. I knew it. Leave a donation and of $5 minimum, and we will answer your question live on the pod.
Cool. All right. That'll do it.
Pickle pod. Pickle pod. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, dollar has gone on.